This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're with Layla Mudin, who's our nutritionist in residence, and she's helping me field your questions. The questions come to us to radioprogram@AOL.com. What's next, Layla?
Okay, we have an email from Ron.
Whoa, my namesake.
Yes. Do you have a working protocol for the treatment of acute sciatica pain? Motrin, aspirin, Aleve, they don't work. Doane's pills helps a little. Tiger Balm works quite well, but not perfectly. And Hatha yoga exercises help to some degree. Of course, oxycodone takes away the pain, but it might be abused.
Yep. Well, when it comes to the acute pain, I think the real exciting new player is CBD or medical marijuana.
Hmm.
And I think that that really should be in more widespread use because a lot of people, this is the pathway by which a lot of people get into opioid addiction, is okay. Through the use of these very, very powerful and addictive medications, which doctors now are really being cautioned about.
Yes.
So Tylenol, according to studies, does virtually nothing for back pain. Advil or Motrin, ibuprofen, help a little bit. They don't do much. Muscle relaxants, they don't do much at all.
Hmm.
There's a wonderful book on the subject of back pain called Crooked. And I forget the name of the author, but it really speaks to the back pain industry. And the author herself suffered from back pain. I interviewed her in a podcast recently.
Uh-huh.
And concluded that the only way to deal with back pain is deal with it proactively and do stretching, which is yoga-based or Pilates-based, strengthen mm-hmm. your core.
Yes.
And that's really worked for me over the years because I was plagued, I was discussing this with you before this podcast. I was really plagued with back pain when I was in my 20s and 30s because
wow.
I was, highly stressed and I was, not getting enough exercise. I was working crazy hours, during my medical training. And it's so much better. It's so much better now.
Terrific.
Recently I took up yoga. Before that, I was doing stretching.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really, really important. I think we have to start looking at back pain in much the way we look at, cholesterol and heart disease, is that we have to undertake preventive programs early in life for starting with, kids in elementary school, I think, so that
PE classes have gone away, to my knowledge, which is a detriment.
We sit, we lose the strength in our backs.
There's more obesity, there's more abdominal fat and all of that. And if you don't have a good, strong core, your back is carrying that weight.
And supplements aren't that important, but I think that they can play a role. I recommend very high doses of fish oil, four or six a day. I would also recommend anti-inflammatories to the extent they may help a little bit, like turmeric extract, curcumin,
Boswellin.
My favorite is Mariva, mm-hmm. perhaps Boswellin. Also magnesium, because there's a muscle spasm element to that. I used to give people mm-hmm. with acute back pain, we'd give them intravenous magnesium, the Myers cocktail, to release the spasm.
Yes.
But it's going to be a self-limited thing. Bed rest, bad. Too much exercise, trying to push your way through it, not good.
Right.
Moderate amount of just stay mobile, keep walking, mm-hmm. Work your way through it.
Mm-hmm. Sitting up straight is not beneficial either. You need to be a little more curved, apparently, something, which is interesting.
And then I really recommend chiropractic, but I think that there are abuses in chiropractic, that...
There isn't a maneuver where they could take pressure off the sciatic nerve or something.
Yeah. I mean, they're trained to do that.
Yeah.
And the quality of chiropractors, like in every field, varies. And mm-hmm. I happen to have a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, was recommended to a very helpful chiropractor. Mm-hmm. And I go now for preventive treatments, even when I'm not in trouble.
Right.
You know, just so that, you know, he checks me out and
stay some, loose.
Some may say that this is like the selling of chiropractic, you know, is that, they get you hooked, they put you on a program. But I actually think that's sort of preventive, because I think keeping your spine aligned and, mm-hmm. you know, having someone assess your posture and maybe mm-hmm. Undertake some minor corrective adjustments can keep you out of trouble.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's not just for when you're in crisis, you know,
right.
you go when you're in crisis and they can help you, but it's hard, you know. The first time I had a chiropractic adjustment, I remember like today, I was in my medical school training and we had short stethoscopes then, you know, mm-hmm. so I had to really lean over for a patient that was in bed, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, now they have, we want to stay further away from patients, you know, this is the change in medicine. But, and I remember, you know, my back just went into horrible spasm and I was like a 90 degree angle. I could barely straighten up. So I called my wife and I said, I got to see a chiropractor. Get me an appointment, you know, and I'll meet you after I'm done today. And so I went to the chiropractor. The office was full of people. He, you know, rushed me into his back room because I was an emergency case. And he proceeded to somewhat violently torque my spine. And I let out a scream that probably cleared out his office.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it was too much.
Wow.
And so for so many years, I had a bad impression of chiropractic.
But not anymore.
No, no,
but
no.
Not anymore. I've awful.
I've rehabilitated my opinion of chiropractic.
Wow.
So anyway, we have to give our sponsors an opportunity to share a message with you, as we customarily do. So please listen. Here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com.
Thanks for listening, and of course, thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make this free broadcast a resource that's available to you. And now back to our questions. What's our next question, Lily?
Okay, we've got an email from Brad. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thank you both for providing such a great program. I've incorporated many of your ideals into my everyday life. Dr. Hoffman, in your opinion, what degree of efficacy does osteopathic manipulative therapy offer? I was diagnosed with two bulging lumbar discs over 10 years ago. My primary is an osteopath, and he's been treating me with adjustments ever since. I'm a healthy and fit 47-year-old male, and I follow a modified paleo diet. I'm considering a change in physicians to one that does not offer osteopathic manipulative therapy, but I'm concerned that my back pain will return. Wow, why change physicians, Brad?
You know, it may be one of those logistic things where the person's not, you know, not in network.
Right, right.
Something,
yeah,
you know,
I'd say stay with that physician.
Economic decisions dictate that. Okay, so I'm an MD and not a DO. And so if you go to a physician, a medical doctor, mm-hmm. You're mostly going to see MDs, but especially certain parts of the country, like the Midwest, perhaps Pennsylvania, parts of the South, you have a fairly high likelihood of seeing a DO,
yeah,
which is a doctor of osteopathic medicine. Now, there are osteopathic medical schools. There are far fewer than medical schools.
Mm-hmm.
But one tenet of osteopathic medicine is manipulative medicine, where they study the spine in a way similar to chiropractic. I guess there's differences, and you know, maybe we should have an osteopath explain this. But they believe in the energy flow and, you know, organ systems related in function to the spinal alignment.
Yeah.
And so they perform adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of classic osteopathic medicine. Now, to me, the problem is that a lot of osteopaths just go to DO school because that's the school they got into. You know, it's the school they were accepted at, and it was, you know, close to where they live, and they went there, and it's just a pathway to become a hospital-based conventional physician. And so they forget everything they learned, because they kind of had to go through that, but that's kind of like, you know, mustache Pete, old stuff, you know, forget about it. I got my degree, now I can hang out a shingle, I'm a doctor.
Right, right.
And so they lost that holistic element that they were taught in DO school. Also, DO schools tend to be more oriented towards nutrition. I've advised some young kids that I've met or that I've in my family that if they want to get a more comprehensive education in a holistic way, they can go to DO school because DO schools will devote a little more time to that. But unfortunately, I think that's gone by the boards to some extent. Maybe some osteopaths will correct me if I'm wrong. So I would say that the minority of osteopaths still practice this manipulative therapy. Most of them, they become radiologists, they become psychiatrists, they become surgeons, and they're just like, they, you know, it's just the initials that are different than their, the type of care that they administer.
Interesting.
So, you know, I think it sounds to me like this is working for this person.
Yeah.
And that this doctor is capable of offering a good primary care experience.
Yeah.
You know, another type of doctor, although the training is completely different, is NDs, naturopathic physicians.
Yes.
And more they're becoming licensed in certain states. Some states resist it.
That's true.
But they also can perform a good primary care function. And they're from the get-go, they're trained in natural therapies. Their limitation is they may be a little less astute about dealing with complex medical problems that involve conventional therapies and medications, although you know, many of the osteopaths I know have a very sophisticated understanding of the interaction of natural therapies with medication.
So overall, the osteopathic manipulative therapy has integrity. It's something that works for many people and should, but it seems to be more of a lost art.
I'm thinking
amongst DOs to some degree.
They're trending away from manipulation.
Brad,
and I'm reading an article on this. It's I searched on the internet. It's often when people hear about osteopathic manipulation, they compare it to chiropractic adjustments or massage therapy. In reality, osteopathic manipulation is different from both of these types of manual therapy for a number of reasons. One primary difference is that only the osteopathic physician has the training to apply the underlying philosophy of osteopathic healthcare with comprehensive medical training in all systems of the body, thus setting the stage for how manipulative medicine can be used with each patient. Well, that sounds a little bit vague, but it's different. It's different. Structure influences function. That's the basic principle of both chiropractic and osteopathic medicine. They differ in their techniques, but they believe that structure, in other words, a gnarly spine impairs organ function and undermines health. If you start spouting that kind of philosophy in the doctor's lounge at a major hospital, they're going to shut you down. So they have to kind of downplay their training.
Right. That's unfortunate, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Brad, we wish you the best of luck. Okay. Let's see. We've got an email from Jerry. On a recent broadcast, Layla spoke about giving her patients glutamine capsules to control cravings as well as for other benefits. I was wondering, what consideration, if any, is given to L-glutamine fueling cancer cells? And apparently, and I talked about this actually, it's been a couple of years ago, I should probably resurrect it or revisit it, where I discussed the role of glutamine in cancer and how it's a bit of a double-edged sword. And that cancer cells use two major fuels. They use glucose, they use glutamine, and of the two, glutamine is the more powerful stimulant for cancer growth.
Right.
Which is interesting.
And how that figures in is that, you know, we talk about the ketogenic diet for cancer. And with the ketogenic diet, you can restrict the fuel for cancer. You can actually get it down to the point where there's no sugar molecules going into cancer. It's very hard to be on a diet where there's no glutamine, because that would be like almost all protein foods have some glutamine, more or less.
Right.
And so actually in implementing a, you know, metabolic program based on diet for starving the cancer cells, people utilize not low glutamine diets, but blockers, glutamine blockers, you know, ways of blocking the metabolism of glutamine. That's where some of the research is going with Dr. Thomas Seyfried. So what say you? I mean, is it, are we telling people that it's going to help their sugar cravings and we're inadvertently giving them cancer?
Well, here's the thing. They could take it for sugar cravings, but I know amongst many practitioners who deal more with cancer, they kind of reduce the amount of glutamine that they would offer a patient, maybe less than 5 grams a day has been the standard amount, as opposed to an 8 or 9 or 10 gram.
I used to use a lot of glutamine for gastrointestinal problems and for, you know, healing the gut and for inflammatory bowel disease. Mm-hmm. And I've backed away from that, not so much because of the cancer thing, but because glutamine is less proven in studies that I've seen for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease.
Yeah, interesting. So, and sometimes it can cause a little more diarrhea in those patients who are prone to it. So glutamine
it can sort of run through you.
It can run through you, exactly. Yeah. So in the research I've looked at, Jerry, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. And for anybody who already has an established cancer, glutamine may or may not be the way to go, but glutamine has other benefits. If you're under certain chemotherapies and things, it can help with any type of nervous system.
Oh, it absolutely is. Yeah. That's another very important use of glutamine. Is in cancer, I use glutamine, but for reducing chemo side effects.
Yes.
And it's very helpful for preventing neuropathy. In fact, I just treated a patient who had went through very heavy-duty chemo.
Right.
No neuropathy whatsoever, which was really nice. With other things, of course, you know, acetyl L-carnitine and, you know, and vitamin B6 and some B12 shots. There's a protocol for that.
Right.
But as soon as this person was done with the chemo, no more glutamine.
Yep.
Done.
Yep. But it saved that person from the ravages of the side effects, which could have been lifelong after
and
that.
There's, when you're taking chemo, there's less danger that the cancer will proliferate.
And Jerry, remember, even in the excerpt that you sent us from Dr. Russell Blaylock saying, if you're eating a lot of sugar and you're eating a lot of glutamine, you're stimulating your cancer powerfully. So even in the context and the setting of a ketogenic diet, some glutamine, especially if undertaking chemo, may be indicated. Even those who are then prone to mouth sores, canker sores, all of that.
Yeah.
Glutamine, swishing,
absolutely,
swallowing, or spitting it out if you're afraid of the glutamine or something.
And glutamine is a preferred
it's an essentially conditional
a nutrient.
Amino acid.
Especially for the cells that line the intestinal tract, the enterocytes.
It's the preferred feeding.
So since people get
feeding.
A lot of gastrointestinal, sometimes even bleeding from chemo, you know, there's damage to the
intestine. And radiation therapy even.
And radiation.
Oh,
my goodness. If someone
enteritis.
Is getting external beam radiation for, say, prostate cancer.
Yeah.
Or they're getting external radiation for uterine cancer. Got to take lots of glutamine because we see a lot of radiation enteritis, which is colitis that occurs in the wake of radiation. And they say it's targeted, you know, that it's very precisely targeted, but it gets away. And I had just recently two men who had very highly focused proton beam, you know, it's supposed to be the most focused thing. And they had terrible diarrhea because they had radiation enteritis. And I said, oh, I wish I'd seen you before so I could have given you a lot of glutamine during that time.
Right.
For protection.
So that's where it would have been beneficial.
Yeah.
So, Jerry,
so
it is
kind of a, there is a relationship to cancer, both causative and protective in chemotherapy.
Yeah. And glutamine is made endogenously, so.
Yeah. You can't.
How do you?
That's right. So you can't even restrict it if you wanted to.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You could create some kind of amino acid formula that people could drink, you know, and get their protein without any glutamine, but you'd still make it.
Your body's still going to make glutamine.
To gluconeogenesis. In order to block that, you'd have to take something that blocks that pathway.
Yeah.
Which there are medications that do that.
Mm-hmm. So, Jerry, thank you for your very, very thoughtful question. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have to do another podcast on glutamine soon.
It seems like sometimes we're caught on the horns of a paradox.
Yes, you know? Yes.
It's like a conundrum.
It's a conundrum, right.
Right.
So.
It's not a paradox, it's a conundrum.
It's a conundrum.
Right.
It's a conundrum.
More precisely. So anyway, we're running short of time, so we thank you for your listenership. We're really excited about the growth of our Intelligent Medicine podcast this year. Just point you in the direction of a really great one on the subject of medical marijuana. I should have mentioned that in the context of back pain, but boy, that was really impressive when I interviewed Dr. Rob Ifker, who is all over medical marijuana.
Wow.
And again, it's not a frivolous thing. It's not, let's get high, let's have an excuse to, smoke dope. It's very precisely administered, very specific strains, combinations of CBD and THC that target horrendous pain syndromes that are just not amenable to conventional therapy, or if are amenable to conventional therapy, result in terrible dependency, opioid addiction, and so on. I think this field is going to explode. And CBD oil is now available.
Yeah.
It's a little less potent for pain. It's helpful. But you probably need a little bit of the THC to get at severe pain syndromes. It's not about smoking pot, because smoking is, I'm still against smoking, because smoking is irritative to the lungs. And so you want to use tinctures, you want to use capsules, you want to use edibles, or you want to vape it. The vaping drugs go in the lungs, but it's actually basically a steam distillate.
It's a steam, right.
Yeah,
and not a smoke.
It's still, that's a relative concern, but it's not quite as harmful as burning plant material.
Yeah.
So listen to that podcast. That's really an important podcast. And so many people in this country are subject to chronic pain, and we need to really open up the avenues of research on cannabinoids.
Yep. Interesting stuff. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's the destination for questions for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Thanks, Layla.
Thank you.
This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.